Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love.
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here, Money, Riches, and Wealth. And Money, Riches, and Wealth. It's the second, isn't it? Gosh, time flies. I was just thinking, it's the second 2022 Money, Riches, and Wealth. Oh, well, I guess I'm just in a fantasy land. But it's the third show in a row where I don't have a co-host. Even though I had co-hosts planned, they were either exhausted or they are sick or whatever the case may be. It's no big deal. I always enjoy having them with me. It's good to have somebody to talk with in case you're not in a talkative mood. And hopefully tonight you are, like you were last week and the week before that. You've been very gracious to me these last 3 weeks and called in, asked questions. And to do that, 410-922-6680 is the way to call in and ask a question and lead the conversation. Say, you know, I could ramble on about things, right? But, you know, if you have something pressing to you, you might say, gosh, this is a great opportunity to get answered what I care about, you know? And as I always say, there's 4, 5, 10 other people out there that want to hear what you want to hear, you know, because they're just not the kind of people that are going to call in the show. There's something about talking on the radio that some people just don't like. I, you know, for some reason, I'm a natural at it. I never considered it much of a big deal. I mean, you can't see people getting mad at you. You can't see people throwing tomatoes at you or anything. So it worked perfectly for me. hopefully you're one of those people who are not at all intimidated by calling into the radio and you want to talk and you got a question and you say, hey, if you can answer this for me, it would be really good. 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680, if you want to call in and ask a question, lead the conversation. But as I always say, I could easily ramble on, so I'm going to just ramble on. I was talking to Sean this morning, and when I was talking to Sean this morning, I was talking about there is nothing about personal finances that is simple. You know, too many people work with people who are salespeople, and the environment they work in, you know, brokerage firms, insurance companies, and what is a brokerage firm? Ameriprise is a brokerage firm. LPL Financial is a brokerage firm. Raymond James is a brokerage firm. But the more common ones are Merrill Lynch, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan. These are all brokerage firms. And in those environments, they're sales environments, in my opinion. I've been in them all, you know, and I've experienced a good bit of it. And it's still to this day is very heavily sales oriented. It's not advice oriented. It's not customer oriented. It's not fiduciary advice. It's not independent. It's not fee only, no commissions in sales. So there is nothing about personal finances that is a simple thing, okay? Which is the way most people want to treat it. And as I was talking about today with Sean, is the required minimum distribution. Anybody over 72 years of age has to take money out of their retirement plans, except for a Roth IRA. It's the only one that you don't have to take a required minimum distribution from. And when you take your required minimum distribution, it's not a simple decision. It is not just simple, well, I'm going to wait until the end of the year, because that way any money that I make, I'm just going to let it defer into the account and I'll wait until the end of the year. There are times that that is a perfectly sound decision, but there are plenty of reasons not to wait for the end of the year. And one of them, as I talked about with Sean, and there's lots of others, is the idea if you're a single person and you have a possibility or a higher probability than normal that you might pass away before the end of the year, you have to decide who's got the lower tax bracket, me or my heirs, whoever they might be, your beneficiaries, we would call them, okay? So in my mother's situation, as I explained with Sean this morning, I always take my mother's early in the year, January. And why do I do that? Because she, first off, always does a qualified charitable distribution to her church. So there's a big tax-free distribution that's going to happen if she takes that RMD early. And number two, she's in a significantly lower tax bracket than any of her four children. All of her four children are in darn close to the highest tax bracket there is. And some of them live in states that are taxable. And therefore, when you throw the state income tax on it, in addition, it's a very high tax bracket. And so if my mother were to die, the tax situation of that required minimum distribution will go to the beneficiaries as opposed to my mother. And that is illogical for me to wait until the end of the year and hope that she makes it through the end of the year. She's 90, going to be 93 in a month. And praise God for that. You know, she's an incredible woman. She's had serious diabetes since she was 45 and not expected to live this long, but she's a tough little old Italian grandmother, you know, as they say. Anyway, I'm going to go to, well, I'll tell you what, Rebecca and Steve, you're going to have to hold for me because I rambled on there until my first pause. Rebecca and Steve, I hope you hold on for me because they are great questions that you have. But we'll be right back with a lot of these interesting questions, money, riches, and wealth.
Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the financial consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Yeah, I know this song, but it's too easy, so I'm not going to fool around with it. I got to go to my callers. I got a lot of callers right now on the line, so we're going to Rebecca in Pennsylvania. How can we help you, Rebecca?
Well, the first thing is I really appreciate your personal stories. I like that, and that's how I learn things. So I'm asking you, okay, I want to downsize, and I don't know what to do. The first thing is I have to pick a place, but then otherwise, to distribute my goods, should I just have my niece and nephew come and like pick out what they want, or should I have an auction, or what should I do? What did you think was best for you?
The way we did it, we had our family come and tell us if they wanted something, and after we went through every family and made sure that they had everything they wanted and we knew what we wanted, we then went through a process of giving it to Goodwill, Salvation Army, sold it at auction, etc., etc., you know? So it's really, it's a personal thing, you know? You just got to, I'd say, suggest you stir.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but did you find the auction was kind of like, it like wasn't like what you thought it would be, or were you happy with the auction?
No, I mean, I've never been to an auction of general stuff that was worth, you know, if you're willing to do a tag sale, a yard sale, an estate sale, whatever you want to call it, every area has a different name for it. If you're willing to do one of them, that's the best way to do it.
Okay, and the other thing was, the first thing, now, how do I get all my stuff transferred to where I want to go? I mean, that's my biggest fear, okay?
What do you mean by transferred? Do you mean like your personal property? Oh, your accounts.
No, my accounts, and it's one thing after another. I've called you several times, and like I got this thing about like, you know, I didn't do stuff, and they were going to turn me over to the state and all kinds of other things, and I finally got things straightened out, and I'm just so terrified of moving out of Pennsylvania.
Well, but you know, there's nothing you have to do other than just make sure you change your address on accounts.
You, 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 Oh, that's such a positive attitude, Drew.
Well, I did it on all mine, and I bet you I have a lot more than you do.
I believe you, but, you know, I still, it's just one thing after another. Maybe it's something I'm doing wrong. I don't know.
Let's put it this way. You know, that's why you should work with a firm like ours. So, because if you did it with us, we'd make sure that they were all taken care of, and you wouldn't have to really worry about it. It's a relatively simple process.
You really, so, I mean, I just want to tell you, I get calls from Merrill Lynch like almost like every 6 months, and I'm just, it's...
Well, you know, that's the kind of firm that I would definitely avoid at all costs. Morgan Stanley, Merrill Lynch, J.P. Morgan, those are firms that I would avoid at all costs. I think that the environment, the culture, is just anti-client, personally. That's just my opinion.
Well, and that's my
opinion. Used to work with them. I used to work with Raymond James, and they are not... You know, they're very similar as to how they operate. But I have to run. I got a caller here I got to get to.
Thanks for everything.
Thank you, Rebecca. You're always so gracious. Anyway, we're going to go to Steve in Delaware. Or not. Yeah, he is in Delaware. Steve, how can we help you?
Hi, good evening. Thank you for taking my call. So my question deals with state tax between Maryland and Delaware. And here's the situation.
I know your situation. It's the nightmare situation. But go ahead. Tell everyone else.
All right. So the wife and I work for various outfits in Maryland. End of last year, we sold our main home. We moved to Delaware. The wife still works part-time for her organization up in Delaware a couple of days a week. I still work for the organization I was affiliated with, but I do remote work. And I still have a home in Maryland that the wife uses to stay when she goes up to Baltimore. And outside of that, I have a daughter living there to kind of look after the place. So my question is, state tax, Maryland, Delaware, I can't imagine having to pay both, but with the screwing...
Well, it's sort of the answer to your question is this is a real mess, okay? You can blame Maryland for the mess if you want, and they should be blamed. Personally, I believe wholeheartedly. Maryland is upset because people are no longer want to live in Maryland, and they're trying to hold on to every tax dollar they can. Okay, now here's the story. It goes back even further. It goes back to about 20 years ago when Maryland and Delaware had a fight. And it used to be that all states that surrounded Maryland, there was reciprocity. It's like Pennsylvania and Maryland. If I lived in Pennsylvania and worked in Maryland, or if I lived in Maryland and worked in Pennsylvania, I paid the tax in the state I live in. And they withhold tax in the state I live in. But if I live in Delaware and work in Maryland, Maryland insists that I pay taxes to Maryland because I'm working in Maryland, even though I live in Delaware, because they refuse to have reciprocity with each other. I don't know what the fight was all about, but they have no reciprocity between each other. So what happens is when you work in Maryland and live in Delaware, you have to pay Maryland taxes and you have to pay Delaware taxes, but Delaware has to give you a credit for every nickel you paid to Maryland. Okay, so now that's not a problem for you because Maryland taxes are higher than Delaware taxes. So technically, you get back what you would have paid in Delaware taxes from your Delaware tax return, but you paid more to Maryland. Now, here's where you're coming from, okay? But I'm not working in Maryland, Drew. I'm working in Delaware. I'm working remotely. Well, here's where it gets complicated. Maryland believes that if you're working in Delaware because of the pandemic, et cetera, and it's a convenience to your employer for you to work in Delaware instead of in Maryland, Maryland still wants income tax from you. And I disagree with that. I think a lot of courts have disagreed with Maryland on this, that if you are working and you literally are disassociated with Maryland and you are a Delaware resident, you should be able to get your employer to only withhold Delaware tax because that's where you're working, as long as your company has a policy that you can work remotely from anywhere you want and it's strictly your decision. It's not the company's convenience that you work there. It's complicated. I wished I had a better answer for you, my friend.
So the bottom line is, the way things are, I have to pay Maryland state tax.
It depends. It depends. I mean, you could go to your employer and argue, I live in Delaware. I'm a Delaware resident. I'm not doing this for your convenience. It is strictly your choice that I can work either remotely or in the office, whatever I choose. Now, if they insist that when this pandemic's over, you have to come back and work in the office in Maryland, then you're sunk. You're sunk. But if they say you can work anywhere in the country, in the world you want to, as long as you could do it remotely and prove that you're doing a good job, then Maryland's sunk. You have to decide that, my friend.
Because it's interesting, because I got a letter from them about 3 months ago stating I have their approval to work remotely.
And it's as long as they give you your approval to work remotely from anywhere in the world, anytime, not just because of the pandemic, but for forever, then Maryland is sunk, and you need to go back to your employer and say, change my withholding to strictly Delaware.
Okay, but without that, I have to pay both Maryland and
then,
Delaware.
Well, what you'll do is you'll pay Maryland, but then you're going to file the income for Delaware, but Delaware has to give you a tax credit for every dollar you paid to Maryland. But if it's more than what you would have paid to Delaware, the max credit you'll get is what you would have paid Delaware.
So how does Maryland handle the state tax for the county side? Because the county always piggybacks on the state tax.
They do it as a non-resident, and so it's a little non-resident up, you know. So in other words, you got a little non-resident bump. It's not as high as Baltimore County tax, et cetera, but it's not the straight Maryland state tax either.
Okay.
It's called a non-resident tax. So it's slightly higher than the state of Maryland tax plus the county tax, the piggyback tax, as they call it. All right?
I understand.
I don't have enough time in a radio show in this short a period to talk about the complexity of what you're dealing with, my friend. And my heart goes out to you, because make sure you have a very good tax person working with you, okay?
Well, you may be getting a call from me.
All right, buddy. You take care.
All right. You too. Thank you. Bye.
Anyway, yeah, that's a ridiculous. Maryland should be embarrassed. They really should be embarrassed, but they're not. They're not embarrassed about anything they do. They think they're the most righteous group in the world, but they should be embarrassed what they do to, you know, the citizens of Maryland. And one day the Maryland residents are going to rally up and say, enough's enough. We've had it with you guys, and we've had it with the way you're treating us. Because if I could really get through to every Maryland resident about how bad Maryland has treated you, you would never vote for these people again. Anyway, I've got to take a hard break. So Jim and Gary, I hope you both hold with me, because you guys have great questions too. But I do have to take a pause here at 6:29. So Chris, all yours, my friend.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBS.
And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're on an open show today. Jim and Gary are on the line. We're going to go to you guys in a second. I just want to let you know we're on an open show. We still have a half hour left to go, so plenty of time for other callers, other questions. 410-922-6680 if you want to call in. I'm by myself tonight, so it would be very helpful if you did want to call and ask a question. We had some good ones, Rebecca and Steve. Those were great questions that they had. So if you have a question you want to get answered, and probably will help a lot of other people, 410-922-6680. Let's go to Jim in Ellicott City. Jim, how can we help you?
Okay. I have a tax question, two questions. My mother passed in October. I'm the executor on the estate. It's a very simple estate in that the remaining assets purposely had been brought down. Thank you, Frank Frankenshear, by the way, for that help. And the assets were far exceeded by the funeral costs. So there were no remaining assets after paying off the funeral expenses. So the estate was immediately closed by the Register of Wills and estates in Howard County when I went to visit them and did the paperwork. Okay, so here's my question. I was looking at the taxes for filing a 1040 in a Maryland tax return. From the calendar year up to October when my mother passed, I think there was roughly 1,500 in long-term capital gains. That's it. So from what I understand and looking at the numbers, there's no tax due, federal nor state. Should I file it anyway?
Did she get her stimulus check of $1,400 back in March?
No, because she has been claimed as a dependent on my wife's joint tax return.
Did you get a $1,400 check for her?
No, I made too much money.
Well, then I would file a tax return for her and ask for the $1,400.
Oh, really?
Yes, sir. Okay. Absolutely.
Can she get that despite the fact that she's claimed as a dependent on my tax return?
I just wouldn't. You probably make too much money to make. The only benefit she could possibly be to you, my friend, is $500. That's it. $1,400.
No.
Last I did the calculation, $1,400 is more than $500.
True. She's a benefit on my tax return because I paid about $40,000 for her assisted living expenses. And deductions.
So did you take that as a medical expense deduction?
Yes. Yeah, that was working with Mr. Frank there at Frank and Shear, yes.
Okay, so then there's a difference. But here's an interesting situation. You could talk to Frank and Shear about this. If your mother claims her own self as a dependent, ask for the $1,400, if you can prove that you provided more than support, et cetera, and she filed her own tax return, you may still be legally able to take her medical expense itemized deductions despite the fact that she filed herself as her own dependent, because there is a provision in the law. Now, I don't know enough about your situation to do this, but there is a provision in the law that you can still take the medical expense deductions for somebody who would have been a dependent of yours under most circumstances, even if they're not a dependent on your tax return. So it's complicated, you know, and so I would suggest you talk to them, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. Frank and Shear is a great company, and did you work with Candace Shear?
No, with Jason.
Okay, you know, but they're a good group, a very good group. Go back and ask them. Say,
okay.
Hey, if I file for my mother as if she filed her own tax return, ask for the $1,400 back, and am I still able to take that tax deduction? And my answer is, I think you may be able to. But again, I don't know the whole full situation.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you that there is a provision in the law that allows somebody like you to take the medical expense deductions for your mother, despite the fact that she's not a dependent on your tax return. All right?
Okay. And the second question, I'm executor of the estate. I do not believe I need to file a 1041 because...
No, you don't need to file a 1041.
Right, because from the time of her death through the end of the year, her estate only generated less than $18 in long-term capital gains.
Yep, nothing you have to worry about there, my friend.
So I registered an EIN number just in case, but I don't have to file is what I understand.
If you took out an EIN number, you might want to just file just for the sake of saying final. Because
okay.
They could contact you. If you took out an EIN number, they may contact you and say, why didn't you file? You know? So I would just file anyway.
Okay.
All right?
Very good. Thank you very much.
Take care. Great call.
Yeah.
Let's go to Gary in Columbia. Gary, how can we help you?
Hey, Drew. Thanks for taking my call. I also have a Maryland retirement concern question. Here it is. This morning on the radio, the tenant governor of Maryland was talking about Hogan's recommendation to spend some of the current state budget surplus to eliminate taxes on retirees' income. Now, I know this isn't going to happen, but when he explained the rationale, he mentioned that there is a severe penalty to die in Maryland. Now, I know about state estate taxes, and I know about non-lineal inheritance tax in Maryland, but what else could he have been talking about?
Well, that's the only thing I could think about is the estate tax or the inheritance tax, and both are ridiculous. I mean, Maryland makes so little bit of money from those two taxes, but they're onerous. You leave money to anybody other than a child, a brother, a parent, or something like that, and then you're talking 10%.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've told clients, either move out of Maryland or just leave it to your brother or sister and let them give it to your nieces or nephews.
Right, I know.
And then, you know, you got the estate tax, and they insist on leaving it at $5 million. I mean, that's ridiculous. It's onerous. Mm-hmm. And why would you sit back? If you're worth more than $5 million, why would you sit back and just accept that, you know?
Right.
I wouldn't.
Now, on that one, most people are probably under the $5 million.
Most people are under the $5 million, and I understand that. And also, if you're married, you get the portability, so it's $10 million. But
right.
If you're worth more than $10 million, why would you sit back and accept that?
I know.
So it's the only thing I can think of that they're talking about. But I will say that the retiree tax system in Maryland, if you're making more than $100,000 a year, not including Social Security, Maryland's a dead state to be living in. It's just ridiculous. If your main income is Social Security and a pension, Maryland's a great state to live in. But not everybody has that anymore.
Yeah, my problem is I have grandchildren in the area, so I'm going to stay. Yeah.
I have grandchildren in the area, too, and I lived 20 minutes from them, 30 minutes from them, and I only saw them four or five times a year. I see them more now when they come down to Florida than I did when they lived 20 or 30 minutes from me, you know?
Well, that's a good point.
Yeah. All right, my friend, good question.
I enjoy your show.
I thank you.
All right.
We're going to go to Kevin in White Marsh. Kevin, how can we help you?
Hi, Drew. I have a question specifically about Roth IRA as I went from working this year to retiring. And I'm
okay.
Not making any earnings right now, and I've done all my contributions during my working career. But I have it in an account with Vanguard, so it's in a bunch of mutual funds. And the question is, I've always reinvested the capital gains distributions and dividends that come in my funds within the Roth IRA account that I've already made the contributions to.
Okay.
And I'm kind of wondering, can that continue now that I'm retired, or do I have to treat them now as something that can't be reinvested?
Your Roth account is your Roth account, Kevin. And so anything inside the Roth account is 100% tax-free under the current tax laws. Now, I will admit that President Biden and his group of bandits did say that if people made a lot of money in their Roth IRA, so if they had $10 million or more, they didn't want it to be that way anymore, okay? Now you say, well, $10 million is not a problem for me, but here's the problem. When people like them start saying $10 million or more, all of a sudden they say, well, wait a minute, we can't do it for just $10 million or more. We got to do it for $1 million or more. Oh, wait a minute, we can't do it just for $1 million or more. We've got to drop it down to $500,000 or more. That's the way that they operate. So always beware when somebody says, oh, well, we can't do it for $10 million or more. Don't sit back and just say to yourself, oh, $10 million or more, that's only those really, really rich people. Always think 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years down the road, they're coming down to me, you know? And so the answer to your question right now is no problem. Everything's tax-free from this point on if it's in the account. It doesn't matter if you're working anymore.
I don't have to withdraw that, right? That can
no, sir. No, sir. You have no required minimum distributions. Everything continues to earn tax-free in that Roth account as long as you're alive. If you're married, it goes to your spouse 100% tax-free. She or he will have no withdrawal period for the rest of their life. It's only when it goes to your children that your children have to start taking money out of the account.
Gotcha. And I get that's just for now and they can change it, but I appreciate you. That was a little unclear to me. So.
Yeah, it's complicated. This stuff is no longer simple anymore, you know, so I understand your complication. You don't have anything to worry about. 100% tax-free. No withdrawals, any situation at this point in time, but do not fall for the phony baloney. We're only dealing with people with $10 million or whatever more. Fight them tooth and nail when they go after those quote-unquote rich people, because history proves they're coming after you in the future. All right, my friend, good question. We got to go to a traffic pause, and we're going to be right back. We're on Open Show, 410-922-6680. We've got Lynn on the line. We hope to answer her question when we come back. But if you want to be on the line, 410-922-6680. Money, riches, and wealth.
Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli, the financial consultant, saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the financial consultant's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right. This Eagles night that Chris has lined up for us tonight. We're on an open show, 410-922-6680. Probably can get another, at least one or two callers in. I've got Lynn on the line, hopefully. And we might as well go right to her question. Lynn, how can we help you?
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call and really appreciate your show. Not really a high finance question, but it's still a problem for me, and I was just wondering your quick input. But I have two credit cards, the Visa and MasterCard, and both of them are maxed out. Both of them are locked up, and I want to pay them up, but we're talking about a significant amount of money, probably $40,000 on each one. And so probably about 10 years ago, I watched someone that I knew actually sit in front of me and went in speaking to a credit card company, went through like three different or four different people and actually got like, I don't know, let's say almost a lot of their interest shaved off. Is there some sort of tactic to use when you call to speak to them to try to get any interest that has accumulated, like reduced? Or what is your opinion, if there's any?
So do you have any assets of any sort whatsoever?
Oh, yes, yes, I do, yes.
So you do have assets and so forth, okay?
Yes. Uh-huh.
So one thing you want to always remember in this situation is do not use IRA assets or 401k assets to try to solve this problem, okay?
Absolutely, okay.
Because those are protected assets, okay?
Right.
But you do have to figure out how to attack this. So, you know, credit card companies, the reason they charge 12, 14, 16, 18% interest is because they expect a lot of defaults on their accounts.
Okay.
That's why they charge such high interest rates, is right. That they expect a lot of defaults.
And I used to only use credit cards as like library cards, and I would always pay them off and everything, but a lot of family illness and things like that. But anyway.
Things happen. I understand that, my friend. So this is nothing you should be ashamed of at all. It happens, and especially in the world that we live in, there's a lot of things that can happen easily to throw you into this situation. So,
Sure. So
keep in mind that, yes, you can call them up and negotiate with them and say, I either have two choices. I either file bankruptcy or I come up with a deal that I can help pay these off at least up to a reasonable amount. So You come up with a number that you think you can pay off and you negotiate with them and see if you can get them to a number that you can pay off. Maybe it's $20,000. Maybe it's $40,000. I don't know. You know what you can possibly do, and you can get them to agree to a smaller sum of money because they would rather have something than nothing. Okay.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
But not knowing your income, not knowing the assets that you have and where they are and how they are, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
It's difficult for me to answer that question. Now,
I see.
you could go to people. There are people that are trained in this. So there are bankruptcy attorneys that are trained in how to...
Well, yeah, I get the mail. You know, a lot of things come through the mail, and I, you know, kind of just want to just pay it off, but, you know, without, like, paying a whole lot of their interest, I guess, as you might want to say.
But it does, it comes down to, Lynn, as to what kind of assets do you have. So if you have enough assets and enough income that a judge could look at and say, well, Lynn, you know, I don't know how I'm going to ask them to reduce your interest when looking at your assets and your income, you can clearly pay this off in a relatively short period of time. You know, then you have a problem. But if you do have a situation where, you know, your income and your assets are not sufficient to easily pay this off, you can negotiate this down very easily.
Oh, okay. And you
but I don't know your situation.
Their financial department is who you would talk to, right?
Okay. Yep, that's who you would just call, you know, the number on the credit card and say, you know, I have a problem with the amount of money. I wanted to see if there's a way that we could negotiate a deal,
okay.
You know, or else I'm going to have no choice but to file bankruptcy. And you know what? I'll tell you what. Bankruptcy is not a bad solution for a lot of people. And I think a lot of people have a very negative impression of bankruptcy.
Uh-huh.
But bankruptcy is designed for this type of situation. It's designed to be a good thing. And many people have recovered from bankruptcy without any real difficulty or struggle. And it's not as horrible a stigma as you might think. A lot of people think it is. So don't rule that out either. But not knowing your situation, your income and your assets,
sure,
it's very difficult for me to actually answer the question.
Okay, but you can try to negotiate. All right.
You can.
Okay, well, that's very helpful. I appreciate that, though. Thank you so much.
All right, Lynn. Now, good luck to you there. God bless you on that.
You too. All right, take care. Thanks.
All right.
Bye-bye.
We don't have anybody else online, 410-922-6680. Were you talking to me, Chris, or was I talking to myself?
No, you were just getting ready to I opened the microphone to find out if you were going to ask me, and it's like, well, you already looked and saw that there's nobody else online.
Well, you know, that's why you're omnipresent, you know, you're always there, you know, that's what
so
I like
true.
About you. Anyway, so we're here on an open show, 410-922-6680. We've only got about 3 or 4 minutes to go. No, but I wanted to, an article I just recently wrote, it's called Best Inflation Hedge, because it's a common question I get asked over and over and over now. Oh, with inflation going, should I be buying Bitcoin? Should I be buying gold? Should I be buying oil with inflation taking off like it is, et cetera, et cetera? First off, I don't believe inflation is taking off like they say it is, okay? I mean, yes, the numbers came out today at 7%. It was a bad number, okay? But a lot of that has to do with COVID and the stupidity of President Biden's policies, trying to tell people you got to be vaccinated and all this other garbage. You know, you need people to stay in work. You don't need to come up with policies to tell people, don't worry about working, you know? And if you don't want to do what I tell you to do, you can't work. Or if you're afraid of working and you need federal assistance to stay home, we'll give it to you. You know, I mean, these are the kind of stupid things that are happening that's causing the inflation rise at this point in time. But this is all fleeting. And the interesting thing that you have to ask yourself is, why is the bond market still accepting only 2.0 or 2.1%, let's just call it 2.1%, for 30 years fixed rate treasury bond? That's an interesting question you have to ask yourself. Why? And don't assume that these are stupid people. So anyway, we got a caller online. Let's go to him real quick. Richard in Easton, how can we help you?
Good evening, sir. I've got a small family business that I am in the process of selling to one of the employees. And my question was really about capital gains tax. When you sell a business, what is taxed? Is it?
Well, let me ask you a quick question. What kind of entity are you? A sole proprietor? Are you an LLC?
LLC.
LLC taxes an S-corp? LLC taxes a partnership or a sole proprietor?
S-corp.
Your tax is an S-corp. Okay. So the answer to your question is, If you sell the LLC membership interest, it's all capital gain. But if your employee's getting advice, they're not going to accept that. The advice that the employee's counselor should give them is do not buy the LLC interest from Richard. So okay. what he's going to get is advice. If I were advising him, I would say buy the assets from Richard. So now the question becomes, Richard, is what assets is he buying from you? And how much is he paying you for those assets? So the first thing you got to, you know, there's, you know, are you buying the assets of the company? Are you buying a not to compete agreement with him? Or are you buying the goodwill of the company? Goodwill is taxes capital gain. That's what you want. You want him to buy goodwill from you. He wants to buy assets from you or not to compete agreements. And there's where the negotiations come in. It's not just the price. It's also what exactly is he buying? And so you want to focus on goodwill, and goodwill will be taxed as a capital gain to you. And it's still a benefit to him. It's not as good a benefit as the assets. But as long as you can prove that the assets aren't worth that much money, and as long as you can get a reasonable amount of money to not to compete against him, you should come out of this as good, and he should come out pretty good also.
So when I've depreciated things like, it's a landscaping business, so I've depreciated things like equipment
and all that kind of stuff.
Props and things like that.
Yeah, so we're out of time, unfortunately, but this is an interesting question. If you want to call me tomorrow, 410-823-7283, I'm more than happy to answer more of your question, okay?
All right, great. Thank you.
All right, buddy. Good question. It's very complicated. Not easy to answer in 30 seconds. Anyway, this is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.
Show them the way you feel. Things are gonna